You made it to Friday. So on Juno Afternoon today, reward yourself by sitting down for some memorable conversations. I'm Rhonda McBride. Coming up, Citizen Cliff Groh comes to Juno to track the legislature. He is not on anyone's payroll. Why, he says he works for you and me. We'll also visit with Hurricane Dave, with guitar in hand, an irreverent look at politics. Also, the Juno Audubon Society's Birds of the Week. Now the forecast. Expect some heavy rain at times tonight, continuing through tomorrow morning with lows in the lower 50s, east winds 15 to 25 miles an hour. Tomorrow, highs in the mid-50s with rain tapering off Saturday night, giving way to mostly cloudy skies on Sunday and Monday. Juno Afternoon will be right back after National Native News. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. Thank you, everyone, for being here with us on this Friday. I'm Rhonda McBride. Our next guest on Juno Afternoon has followed the ins and outs of the state budget since he was a young man and had a hand in creating our permanent fund dividend as a legislative staffer who helped craft this legislation. Cliff Groh is a writer, an attorney, and he says that he comes to Juno now to track the special session as simply Citizen Cliff. He says his job is to save the state of Alaska, and one that he doesn't draw a paycheck for. His bosses, he says, are you, me, and every Joe and Jane in Alaska. So I hope that there are others besides you, Clifford, that are working to save the state.
Well, a lot of people are, Rhonda, and I cringe when you say this because, of course, if that were really my job in a traditional sense, I would have been fired long ago, as someone pointed out recently. And just glad, as I also joke, that there's nobody preparing any performance evaluations for me. But I am... I'm very interested in what happens and is happening with our state fiscal system, which is the way the state of Alaska saves money, collects it, and spends it. And I have, as you noted, worked on in this area off and on for more than 40 years, both while working for the Alaska legislature, the Alaska Department of Revenue as a special assistant to the commissioner, and also as a private citizen. And involved in both with organizations and also now in my current role as you said, Citizen Cliff Groh.
Citizen Cliff. So is anybody sponsoring you? Anybody paying for your efforts here in Juno?
No, I just do this myself. I paid to come down and left behind my wife and my home in Anchorage. I'm a former Juno resident, but I've lived in Anchorage for a long time now. And came down here, a friend of mine said, hey, Cliff, you could stay at a place at a house he has on Chicken Ridge, which is where I'm staying. But no, I buy my own groceries, pay my expenses, and I feel lucky to be able to try to help.
Why?
This is really important, Rhonda, and I think I can be helpful. So I write a daily dispatch, which I send out by email. If I could get some help, I'd figure out a way, and had some time, I'd start up a blog again. I also place some of my work as op-eds in newspapers and other media outlets around the state. And then I, meet with legislators, staff members, other observers, and I try to talk to them, maybe help bring them together and talk about possible approaches that could help address and perhaps resolve our state's very substantial structural deficit.
So week one, what was that like? What did you do? What did you find out? What's your sense of things?
Rhonda, it's not real favorable in the sense that back in May and June, when the governor first announced, and shortly after he first announced the first special session, I thought there were some possibilities for what I would call a big fix. And when I say a big fix, I mean a big fix that is sustainable to address and maybe eliminate our state's, as I said, very substantial structural deficit. I'm less optimistic now because I thought that that there would be more cooperation and more compromise and less rigid adherence to previously stated positions that are, you know, mutually contradictory, you know, far apart. And I would say that if you find Alaska politics about the budget and about taxes and about dividends complicated, it's because they are. I've said repeatedly, and an expert just emailed me today, that, you know, a national expert said, hey, Cliff, you're right about this. Alaska has the most complicated fiscal politics in the United States. The fiscal policy is not simple about the percent of market value system for sustainable spending and permanent earnings. And oil taxes, you know, could be pretty complicated. But it's our fiscal politics, and especially the number of sides we have in our politics, that make Alaska's fiscal politics, as I said, the most complicated in our whole country.
Well, one of the things I wanted you to do is talk about an editorial you wrote for the Anchorage Daily News, and the headline was Alaska's Cockpit Standoff and the Need to Land the Plane. And I guess I should start off by asking you, this fiscal plane that we're on, how much time do we have up in the air? Are we running out of fuel? What's the issue here?
Yeah, I sometimes said, well, the plane is running out of fuel. It might even be on fire, Rhonda, maybe both, but definitely running out of fuel, because the state of Alaska faces very substantial deficits under current law going forward. And the way to understand Alaska fiscal politics is, in every other state, there's essentially a two-sided wrestling match. There's a wrestling match between people who want more services versus people who don't want to pay more taxes. And that's the traditional wrestling match, you know, from, you're going to see from Florida to California, from Maine to Arizona. But in Alaska, it's all different. It's not like a two-sided wrestling match. What we have in Alaska is what best understood as essentially a hopped-up cross between the movies Reservoir Dogs and Snakes on a Plane. And the best way to understand it is that there are, as a cockpit, is an airplane flying along with running out of fuel, and there are five people in the cockpit pointing guns at each other. So they have a gun in each hand. If they could figure out a way to hold a gun accurately in their mouth, they'd all be doing that too. And then the five people, at least five people holding guns in the cockpit, each other, holding guns on each other in the cockpit, are first, and they're defined most and best by what they're most afraid of. So the first group, first person holding guns on the others in the cockpit, is the person in the group of Alaskans who's most afraid of more additional budget cuts. The state of Alaska's cut its budget a lot in the last 8 years, particularly in the capital budget, but in the operating budget as well. And there's a group of people most afraid of more budget cuts, like maybe a parent of a young child who's worried that additional budget cuts would threaten their child's education. Then there's a second person pointing guns in the cockpit at all the others, and that's the person who would be most afraid of having Alaska bring back broad-based taxes. Alaska is the only state in the country without a broad-based tax of any kind. And this person who's most afraid of broad-based taxes coming back to Alaska would be perhaps particularly a person who's most afraid of the state of Alaska bringing back a personal income tax on a graduated basis like Alaska had between 1949 and 1980.
So what do they have at stake? I mean, how much money is involved for some?
Well, there's some millionaires in Alaska, Rhonda, and I've met some. I've met a surgeon who made $5.5 million in net income in 1 year. Net income is, you know, after you pay the nurses and pay the rent and pay for the equipment. And made $5.5 million in net income in 1 year. And, you know, there's some other people highly paid in Alaska, like I think of some corporation executives, I think of surgeons, I think of specialty physicians. And they're very unhappy and concerned about the possibility that the state of Alaska would bring back a personal income tax, particularly on a graduated basis. And there's also, you know, other broad-based taxes that occur as well. That's sort of the purest form. The third person holding guns in the cockpit on each other would be the person who's most afraid of additional dividend cuts in permanent dividends from the statutory baseline, the baseline from It's in the law today with a formula that was created in the 1980s. And, you know, you could think of a lot of people who might be like that in both urban and rural Alaska. The fourth person holding guns in the cockpit at each other is someone who's most afraid of higher rail taxes. You might think of an oil company executive or an oil company roughneck in that category. And the fifth person holding guns on the other four people in the cockpit is someone who's most afraid that the state of Alaska will overdraw the permanent fund earnings, overdraw the permanent fund, and spend too much of the permanent fund earnings and erode the value of the permanent fund going forward, so it has less ability to help support the state of Alaska's spending in the future. And when I think of that person, I think of a person who wants to live in Alaska and expects to live in Alaska a long time. I often see that some of the most powerful people in Alaska are people who want to leave soon. And if you want to leave soon, you don't care about this. But if you think that you're going to be living in Alaska in the year 2040 or the year 2045, you might be particularly concerned about having the state spend its permanent earnings away.
So it seems like the permanent fund dividend is sort of at the heart of this debate. And I wonder, when you and other staffers were crafting the legislation to create this, did you imagine this five-gun standoff in the cockpit? And it's destructive, this debate.
The permafin dividend is a powerful force in Alaska politics. It's become way more powerful than I ever thought it would be, and it's become different than I ever thought it would be. But it's a fact that it exists, and people have to figure out how to deal with it now. And I will tell you that I published three books or booklets last year offering my my observations about both the problem we have and reviewing the possible potential solutions and proposing, one myself, the Alaska plan, as I like to call it. I first called it the GROW plan. One of my friends said, Cliff, you're not popular enough to have a plan named after yourself. You should call it the Alaska plan. I think other people try to use that name too. But I do think people need to think really clearly about the choices, and there are important decisions to be made right now, because the state has spent almost all the savings, effectively all the savings, outside the permanent fund. And the big oil money is not coming in the way that it used to. And that's the reason where we are today. And people in Alaska need to think really clearly about what they want and what the actual choices are, and not fall for bumper sticker slogans that might sound attractive but are equally wrong.
So, observing what you've observed this week and from what you're hearing...
Last week, too.
Are we any further along?
I applaud the work of the legislature's Comprehensive Fiscal Plan Working Group. And they worked this summer, a bipartisan group of legislators, a bicameral group, members of the House and Senate, Republicans, Democrats, and an independent. And they produced a document 8 pages long. You can get it from the legislature. And it really helped set out the problem and work toward a solution. And I think that, unfortunately, not all legislators went through that process. 60 legislators and only 8 went through the process. Rhonda, the state of Alaska would be better if all 60 went through it, because we have the most divided fiscal politics in the United States, both the most complicated and the most divided, and a lot of people who don't seem interested in a compromise. And that's setting us up for the plane crashing in the mountain, a very bad outcome.
And by a bad outcome, you mean not enough money to fund important programs, and
sure,
where people really feel some pain and suffering.
Sure. And yeah, and then there was talk about proposals made at one of the few committees meetings that happened in the first 2 weeks, because a lot of people have been out of town, a lot of people left. But the House Finance Committee had one meeting, and so the director of Legislative Finance Agency was asked, what is the effect if we adopt this amendment? And he says, well, we have only $300,000 left in the general fund, because we're operating at a smaller margin now because of both the spending of the reserves, the legal issues surrounding the constitutional budget reserve, and we operate a much smaller margin and we have less money, and we just face difficult choices. And a lot of people don't seem to want to actually make the choices, and that's why I'm particularly worried that all the permanent fund earnings will get spent, because that's the people who that holding the guns who represent the future are perhaps the least powerful Alaskans.
Well, in just closing our conversation here, and I really hope that you can come back and tell us more as we go forward in this. I'm sure it doesn't sound like there's going to be a quick resolution to the state's fiscal crisis.
No, I do not think so. Rather, there'll be more time for us to talk about it, and I'm all in and coming back and talking to you.
And have some other perspectives involved as well.
Sure.
But just in wrapping things up for today, what's on the radar for next week? What are you looking to find out?
I think there's going to be more attention and exposure given to that report of the and some hearings on the Comprehensive Fiscal Plan Working Group. I think that that's a useful thing. I also think there's going to be a budget moves through this to fix some of the problems, including right now, if that budget doesn't go through, there will be no dividend this year. There'll be a zero dividend. And so right now there's a game of chicken over what the size of the dividend will be. And the result might be just like the car crash that kills all people in both cars, that there's no dividend at all. So people ask and need to think really clearly and follow, like I said, the activities of the legislature and get more involved in this discussion and debate.
You know, and I don't think that it's a good omen that you are staying in a house on Chicken Ridge.
I always try to be hopeful and optimistic. Rhonda, we'll see if it works.
All right.
I feel lucky to be here.
Thank you. We are lucky to have you here. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rhonda.
Cliff Groh, Citizen Cliff, pumping out Cliff Notes for anyone who wants them. And just real quick, if they want your Cliff Notes, where
they
do they
can
go?
They email me at cliff.groh@gmail.com. That's cliff.groh@gmail.com.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And I'll let you get back to your very important job of saving the state.
Oh, thank you, Rhonda.
All right. Well, we're not done with the permanent fund dividend today. Stay with us. Whoa, whoa. Coming up, another take on the permanent fund dividend, this one from Hurricane Dave. But can you trust anybody with a name like Hurricane Dave? Find out when we come back. Just because we live up here, how you spend it don't matter to me.
Get an old truck or a new TV. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO Radio. Here's your host, Rona McBride.
Doggone it.
That's Rhonda, Dave.
Rhonda McBride.
You've known me for years.
Yes, I have.
And how can you get my name wrong?
I don't know there. I don't know.
No, you got to let me say my thing here.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Right. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. I'm Rhonda McBride, and we have a red carpet guest today, singer-songwriter Hurricane Dave. Am I allowed to use your real name here? Can I say what it is?
That is my real name, Rhonda, and this is my real voice, Hurricane Dave.
No, you're putting on airs, Dave.
No, this is my PBS voice. This is my public radio voice. This is my NPR voice. This is my K2 whoa voice.
No, you're saying it incorrectly. It's KTOO.
Kate, what did I say?
You said K2. It's not K2. It's KTOO.
You're making fun of my speech impediment now. KT whoa.
We're not getting very far.
We're not.
Hurricane.
Let's call this off. I'm leaving now.
No.
I don't have to put up with this.
Well, disclosure here. I have to say that I've known Dave for many, many years, and I've felt the need for some hearty laughter. So I invited you to Juno Afternoon to cheer us up with some of your songs and witticisms.
I appreciate it, and I really had trouble driving over here. I got to a certain point, and there was nothing but water. Inside of the car, I got a little bit wet, along about halfway between Douglas and Juno. But I made it, and it was a lovely drive.
Well, we're so glad that you could make it all the way from South Central Alaska in Anchorage.
Yes.
Now,
how did you get the name Hurricane Dave? It's not your real name, but you go by it.
Well, Dave is my real name. Okay, so I was playing music in Florida before I moved up to Anchorage 13 years ago. And there was this promoter who was going to get me all kinds of gigs. But he says, you need a gimmick. And there was, at that time, there was a guy named Bahama Bob. And there was a guy named Shrimp Boot Charlie or something like that. And he said, you need a name like Hurricane Dave. And I kind of liked the sound of it. And he said, yeah, we'll use that. We'll promote you as Hurricane Dave. And I'll get you all kinds of gigs. And, you know, he never got me a single gig. But I kept the name. And every time I tell the story, people nod off, just like you are now. Rhonda, get up off the floor.
Oh, I was settling in.
It's a terrible, terrible story. And over the years, I've decided maybe I should make up something interesting, but I'm not one to make things up.
You know, and I should probably stop us here before we go further, because you should come with a warning label. You never tell a lie. That much is true. But some of the things you say, people probably shouldn't believe.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, just stick around for a while, and our listeners will learn what I'm talking about.
I have been known to embellish on the truth, but as far as telling out-and-out lies, it depends on how you define lies. It depends on what your definition of is.
All right. Well, let's leave it there. We won't go into this very deeply. I want to talk about how you got to Alaska.
I got to Alaska in a black Nissan pickup truck.
And what brought you here?
The black Nissan pickup truck. Weren't you paying attention? My wife and I, bless her heart, my wife and I came up here on vacation in 2004. We took a cruise. And went up the Inside Passage, saw the Mendenhall Glacier and the Salmon Bake in Juneau and the place where they grow the salmon there and all those other places. And we did the cruise, and then we did a road trip, self-guided road trip from Seward up to Denali and points in between, and just fell in love with this place. Went back to Florida, Fort Lauderdale, where we were living at the time. Over the course of the next couple of years, we decided we should be snowbirds, and so we came up in the summer of 2008 and never went back.
So, Dave, what was the song that came out of your trip to Alaska?
It was called Dance with the Wide-Eyed Chechakos, or Dave and Jill's Waltz. Jill being my wife, I think. Yes, she's my wife. And the chorus is Dance with the Wide-Eyed Chechakos. It's about dancing with us. It's actually, the dance is symbolic. We weren't physically dancing. We were symbolically dancing. And I think the song speaks for itself.
Floridians on a 2-week vacation to a place that wasn't as hot. Charmed and amazed by Alaska, they came back just for the summer, they thought. But soon their surroundings seduced them. Like a bear in a snare, they were caught. Yes, they found their soulmate was the 49th state, and Fort Lauderdale they soon forgot. So dance with the wide-eyed Chechakos. Alaska's the home they hold dear. They work and they play, there's adventure each day as they waltz through the last frontier.
Dance with the Wide-Eyed Chechakos, which is a waltz, is probably one of the few serious songs on your Chechako Chronicles. The rest are kind of humorous. You know, we've got titles like A Grizzly Stole My Salmon, But She Let Me Keep My Arm.
That's a true story. Inspired by something I saw in Juneau on that first trip that I mentioned.
Tell us the story, the backstory.
Not very interesting. We were down at Mendenhall Glacier, or up at the Mendenhall Glacier, whichever is right. We were at the Mendenhall Glacier. And there's this elevated walkway. And you look down, and lo and behold, there is a big black bear, sow, with her three cubs, young cubs, tailing along behind her. And the sow is slapping her paw into the water and coming back up with a salmon. She's got it in her mouth, and she just slings it backwards to the cubs. And, you know, like typical kids, the little cubs just kind of nibble at it and then get really disinterested in it quick because they get distracted by the mosquito or something like that. And this is going on. I just thought it was kind of a hilarious scene. That sort of inspired the song, even though the song took a sharp turn from there. But yeah, the roots of that song are right here in Juneau, home of KT Whoa Whoa.
So will you entertain us with it?
Well, I'll sing it for you. Whoa, a grizzly stole my salmon, but she let me keep my arm. She was just feeding her cubbies. No, she didn't mean no harm. This ain't how we go fishing on my Pennsylvania farm. The grizzly stole my salmon, but she let me keep my arm. I should mention I've never lived in Pennsylvania. It was just, it needed that many syllables. It was either Pennsylvania or Indiana or Minnesota, and I just thought it'd be Pennsylvania.
Well, you know, like I told people that you never tell a lie, but...
That's true. But, it's true that I've
never
lived
in. But not everything you say is true.
In South Central Alaska, from May past Labor Day, the salmon are a-running to get upstream to play. The anglers put on waders and strolled into the creek for a thing called combat fishing, where they all stand cheek to cheek. Rows and rows of fishers bait their hooks and drop their lines. Wedged between each other, they sometimes get entwined. But it isn't just the humans who go out fishing there. The sportsmen share their favorite spots with big brown grizzly bears. Sows jump in the water, snag those meaty swimmers, toss them to their little cubs who eat them for their dinners. One day a sow got her big paws caught on my fishing line and took away a humpy that I thought was surely mine. Now, right here, this shows my chichaco-ness here, because at the time I wrote the song, I didn't realize that a humpy was an undesirable fish to catch.
And not big enough for a bear.
Well, they're big, but there's just not a whole lot of meat on them. That's at that stage in their lives. So, but it was the Chichaco Chronicles, not the Sourdough Chronicles, so I get a pass on that. Where was I? Oh, grizzly stole my salmon, but she let me keep my arm. She was just feeding her cubbies. No, she didn't mean no harm. This ain't how we go fishing on my Pennsylvania farm. The grizzly stole my salmon, but she let me keep my arm. And it goes downhill from there. There's another verse. And somebody reviewed the album at the time it came out in the, I think it was in the Anchorage Press or the Anchorage Daily News or one of those papers. And he said that the album, the tone of the album itself was your obnoxious uncle telling bad jokes. And I took great pride in that.
Only you would take great pride.
Well, because at the very end of the review, he said, give the man his PFD. That's true.
Speaking of which, you've written a song about the PFD.
I have, and much to my extreme distress, it has not sold well at all and has not been played much at all.
Well, we'll give it a play here on KT Whoa Whoa.
Whoa Whoa. It was recorded at the Man Cave in Anchorage, Alaska. And at the end features Rosie O'Doggy and the Hellhound Choir. That's true.
That's why we're going to play the recording, because we couldn't bring Rosie O'Doggy and the Hellhound Choir in.
Yeah, they don't work cheap. I went through a lot of milk bones making that single. So.
All right. Well, let's give it a listen.
Whoa.
get a big fat chick once a year. Just because we live up here, how you spend it don't matter to me. Get an old truck or a new TV. You can improve the way you live, or just pick, click, give. But on this we can all agree, keep your hands off my PFD. Whoa, whoa. Some want to take part of it away. The state, it seems, has bills to pay. Lazy politicians cast an eye, stick their fingers in the pie. The last governor gave it a whack. The new gov says he's gonna pay it back. That money's mine, it ain't no joke. What do I care if the state goes broke? Whoa, whoa. So we're in the midst of a nasty fight in a state that leans just to the right. The crazy irony is this: ain't nothing more socialist. Now you and I will get along just fine. Steal my woman, drink my wine, a moose to my apple tree, but don't you touch my PFD. Sick 'em, boys. That money's mine.
So you say that no one's wanted to play this song on the radio. You just haven't had any airplay. Is it possibly because they can't figure out what position the song takes, whether it's maybe satire about someone who wants a full PFD, or is it an anthem for the person who wants a full PFD?
Yes. Yes, it is. Both. Or neither. Or a little bit of either. I don't know.
Sometimes it sounds like you're making fun of that person that wants the mega PFD.
Sometimes I am. Sometimes I'm not. Now, mind you, I wrote this song 2 or 3 years ago, not long after our present governor became the present governor. And largely he ran on the PFD issue. And I thought surely either the governor or some other political hack would try to license the song and I can make a few bucks. No, that was not to be. And the song, surprisingly enough, is still valid from either viewpoint. because they still have not solved the problem.
What's your prediction?
My prediction is that song will still be valid 3 more years from now, and I still won't have made a dime off of it.
I just love the lyrics for this. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Is that like, whoa, don't touch my PFD? Is that what that means?
Well, no, I was throwing in your call letters in the hopes that you would play the song where it goes, whoa, 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 whoa. The implication there is KT, whoa, 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 whoa. That's why.
You want me to play it again? We've already played it once, Dave.
Well, you know, that's why it's not selling. People are playing it once and they're thinking, okay, people have memorized that now. So I do everything I possibly can to suck up to radio stations, including putting their call letters in as the chorus of a song.
So the lyrics here, the last governor gave it a whack. The new guy says he's going to pay it back. That money's mine. It ain't no joke. What do I care if the state goes broke? That's horrible, Dave.
The writing is horrible or the idea is horrible?
The writing's pretty good. The idea is horrible. What do I care if the state goes broke?
Well, there you have it. That's what some people are saying, basically. What do I care if the state goes broke? And in fact, the state is perilously close to doing that.
So what was the actual moment of inspiration for this song?
As with most of my songs lately, the Anchorage Folk Festival was the inspiration. The Anchorage Folk Festival happens at the end of January every year, or every year when there's not a pandemic. Inevitably, along about Christmas or New Year's, a little light goes on and says, you've got to have a new song for the folk festival. Because I'm incredibly lazy as a songwriter. So I thought, well, what can I do? And about that time, there was just a big, ugly fight going on between the governor and some legislators and some other people about the PFD. So I thought, okay, I'll do something about the PFD. And threw in a harmonica and got a bunch of people to sing with me. And I had to make the lyrics easy. That's why the whoa, 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 whoa. I mean, you can't go wrong with that. So I was inspired by politics and frustration with people not being able to listen to each other and come up with a compromise, and the fact that I had to have a new song for the folk festival.
It was kind of what they say, a harmonic convergence.
Yes, yes, it was harmonic. Harmonica convergence.
A harmonica convergence.
And there is, by the way, on YouTube somewhere, there is a recording of that song with a very fine harmonica player, John Cook. It's a fun song, and the audience gets to sing. And it's, anytime you can get the audience to sing along with you, you're doing something good.
For as divisive as the topic is, it is nice to have people sing along with you.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I could bring those people together to sing the song. Why can't your buddies in Juneau bring people together to come to some kind of solution to all this?
I don't think many people in Juneau would claim them as their buddies.
Well, that's true.
But that isn't your first foray into politics.
Oh, no.
Years ago, you had a song that was written about then-Governor Sarah Palin.
Nope. Some people assumed that was who it was about. We don't mention that name.
Oh, why?
She is not to be mentioned.
Is she a she who must not be named?
That's the she who must not be named. As Jon Stewart said on The Daily Show one night, if you stand in front of a mirror and say, you betcha, 3 times, she magically appears. Try it sometime. She was in my house one night. Scared the heck out of me. What was your question?
My question was about the song that you allegedly wrote about her.
No, the song that some people said was about her. I got my start as a songwriter when I was in college, writing songs about Richard Nixon. I did an entire opera about Richard Nixon. And as soon as I finished it, he resigned. I write this song about someone who might have been governor here. And I had it half written, and she resigned. So, you know, go figure. My songs seem to have unintended effects. But what was your question?
So tell us about this
song. Where am I? I'll tell you about the song. It's a love song. It's about a love affair gone bad. It's about an entire state that was in love with this woman, whoever she might have been. And it was a typical country song. She'd done him wrong. It was a bad breakup. It was a love affair gone bad. And some people interpreted it as being a political song. I guess maybe because it was called Please Don't Ask Me About Her. People kept asking me about her. And that's really what inspired the song. At that point in time, 2008, you can do your political history and find out what happened then. But in 2008, something happened in the presidential race that brought someone to prominence. I got tired of people asking me about her. Now they're asking me about the song. At one point, they said, why are you playing that tired old song after all these years? Why are you kicking that dead horse? And I said, hey, I got to sell CDs, man. A buck's a buck.
Well, I don't know if that song has shelf life, but it'd be fun to hear.
It sold a million copies. It sold 1,027 copies.
You're sure not 1,028 copies?
No, 27. They were all in my family, and I counted all of them. I would have sold 28, but I ran out of copies. 1,028.
Let's listen to this song.
That's a swell idea.
Right here on KT Whoa Whoa.
You can ask me about the midnight sun that glows in summertime, or the northern lights of winter whose ribbons blow my mind. You can ask me about the Iditarod or the rendezvous of fur, but please don't ask me about her. She said she loved me, it was just a trick. When she winked at them, I realized she was no maverick. We'd gaze across at Russia and make up words. Oh, please don't ask me about her.
We're back here at KT. Whoa, whoa.
That's a great song, especially if you know the backstory behind it. I think that Alaskans at that time, whenever they traveled outside, they would get asked questions about she who we cannot name right now.
And truth be told, should it be told, I borrowed that idea from an item in The Ear. Do you remember The Ear?
It was a little gossip column in the Anchorage Daily News.
Yeah, there was an item in there one day about how someone local had been to a meeting of Republicans of some sort on the East Coast of Lower 48, and somebody from Alaska had made some buttons up, and the buttons said, I'm from Alaska, and please don't ask me about her. And I thought, whoa, there's a song there. So I don't know, somebody in Alaska for the past however many years it's been is probably saying, that guy stole my idea. He or she is right. I did steal that idea.
Well, let's just call it inspiration.
I was inspired by that idea.
Well, in wrapping things up here, Dave.
Oh, no. Is my time up already? I'm having such a good time.
I am, too. I have to admit it. It's been fun sitting here talking with you, hearing you reminisce and hearing the backstories on some of these songs. What you working on next?
Retirement. I'm old, Rhonda. I'm 87 years old or close to it. I don't know. Maybe I'm 33. I just can't remember.
It comes with age sometimes.
Yeah. No, actually, what I'm working on now is, I've got this leftover song from the pandemic, and my vision of the song is like an old New York doo-wop kind of song, and I've written the one line, and I wrote it a year ago, and I haven't done anything with it, so if anybody wants to steal this, by all means, go ahead. I hope you have as much success with it as I've had with other of my compositions.
Maybe this will be the million-dollar copy.
Yeah, and somebody will steal it and make $1 million, like Jimmy Buffett did with Margaritaville. You know, that was one of my songs. It was originally called Frozen Margaritaville. But anyhow, that's a whole other thing. This would be called 6 Feet Away. 6 feet away, 6 feet away. Can't make love to my baby when she's 6 feet away. Whoa, 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 whoa. Whoa, 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 whoa. I'm really having fun here on KT. Whoa, whoa.
And I think we're just going to leave it there, Dave. Nice having you visit.
Thank you.
Hurricane Dave.
Thank you, Rhonda. This has indeed been a rare pleasure. And next time you're desperate for someone to have on your show, try getting somebody with talent. Thank you, Rhonda. It's been good.
Well, you do have one talent, Dave, and that's to make people laugh. It's been great. Thank you.
Yes.
Up next, a bird by the same name would still have the same tweet, right? Juno Audubon Society weighs in on that when we come back.
The Juno Arts and Humanities Council presents Fresh Air Markets for Summer 2021, made possible with generous support from IBEW. Markets feature local vendors and goods once a month on Saturday mornings from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. in the courtyard between Centennial Hall and the Jack. This event is open to the public. Grab your family and friends and head downtown this Saturday for a morning of art, music, food, and fun. To learn more, visit jahc.org.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon, and to send you off to the weekend, we have Brenda Wright from the Juno Audubon Society joining us to spotlight a few birds for us. So, Brenda, what do birders have in their binoculars these days? What are they focused on?
Well, right now, for sure, the shorebirds are passing through. I was lucky on one of those sunny days to just sit there out in the sunshine at Eagle Beach, and three different kinds of shorebirds walked right up to my feet to show me how pretty they were.
And what were those?
Well, they were the lesser yellow legs and the western sandpiper and semi-palmated plovers.
And that happens to be one of the birds you're spotlighting this week. That's a very interesting name, semi-palmated plover. What's that all about?
Well, it's a pretty little bird. It's very small, smaller than a robin, not much bigger than a sparrow. It's got this beautiful band across its chest. That's one of the ways that they identified different birds, by saying palmated. And so you know where to look for a band.
Tell us a little bit about the plover.
Well, this little guy goes all the way up to the northern parts of our state, quite a long distance, and then it spends its winter along the Pacific coast and the Gulf coast. So it's a huge traveler. But the one really fun thing about it is that they may be small, but their pattern is really easy to catch. They have a bright white belly, a black band across their nose and breast, and a white forehead. So as they turn and look at you and move around, all different kinds of colors flash at you.
And do they have a distinct sound?
Well, they sound like a shorebird.
All right, let's listen.
The fun thing for me, though, is that a whole lot of them actually make noises while they fly. And so they're very small birds. And so if you're lucky enough to hear them, you can get your binoculars on them and try and see where they land so you can get a better look.
So aside from watching out for the migrant birds, I understand that there was some excitement in the birding community when word was put out that the American crow is here, something that we don't have in our list of local birds. Can you explain what that excitement was all about?
Oh, sure. Every time that there's a brand new bird in Juno, there's a way to find out if you sign up for a bird alert list. And so as soon as you find out that there's a brand new bird in town, you find out where it was found. And then everybody that can get a chance goes to that same location to look for it. But when they said American crow, I went, oh no, the only way I can tell an American crow from our Northwest crow is by the way it talks. It has a slightly different sound to it, to me. And there's tons of crows in Juneau. So how in the world am I going to identify this American crow from the Northwest crow? So I was very happy to find out that it's a name change. It's not a bird change.
What is it that they say in Romeo and Juliet, a rose by any other name would smell as sweet. So a crow yep. by any other name sounds would, the same.
Yep, calls the same. Yep, it does. It does.
All right, so let's listen. We have one more bird of the week to talk about, and this is the short-billed gull or mew. And that also, I understand, went through a name change.
Yep, that's very correct. This one has been for a long time, the name mew, it was not considered a really good name for it. And when they do their decisions, the American Ornithological Society makes their decisions, they try to drop the names that are no longer in use. Like there were lots of different names for bald eagles before we settled on bald eagle. So now the mew gull is actually a short-billed gull.
To me, gulls are just gulls. I would hardly know how to distinguish them. Does this one have a slightly different sound?
Well, you know, because of its size, it does actually have a little bit higher pitch. If you sit long enough next to a small flock of gulls, you can hear every single sound they make. They're talking all the time.
All right, here we go. So what are you hoping to see this weekend?
Well, I wouldn't mind seeing some of the larger birds, the Hudsonian godwit, but an upland sandpiper would be lovely too. People have been reporting that.
All righty. Well, thank you so much, Brenda Wright with the Juneau Audubon Society. Thanks, Brenda.
Thank you, Rhonda.
Support for Juneau Afternoon is provided by Hanson Gress, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Klingit and Haida Social Enterprises. For more information, visit ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon.
Juneau Afternoon is produced by the KTOO Arts and Culture team, led by Cheryl Snyder. Shelley Delaney and I take turns hosting. I'm Rhonda McBride. Thank you for joining us, and have a great weekend.